Welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. Go to ledgerstatus.com to subscribe to this podcast and more. Also, two other podcasts I want to tell you about really, really quick. Tulips FM. Tulips.fm is a roundtable podcast about all markets that I just started with some friends. It's a really casual conversation talking about equities, Forex, crypto, anything with a chart. We'll talk about it. Super fun. Also, I was on the Coin Talk show again. They're good friends of mine. We talked about my journey playing Hero, a gamified crypto trading thing that's a lot of fun. And we also talked about a lot of like market stuff in general. It was a good time. Here's our conversation with Josh. Keep in mind, none of this is financial advice. We're just telling stories, catching up, and having fun. We go into a lot of TA stuff and then dig into the news. Hope you enjoy it. And here's the show. Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. I'm here with the infamous Josh Olswich, otherwise known as Carpe Noctum, on the internet. Hey, Josh.
How's it going, Brian?
Oh, it's going great. It's great to have you back. We're actually recording a doubleheader today, but people listening to this will get the one we just recorded in a few days. We did a conversation with a tax accountant talking about crypto and taxes. So folks have that to look forward to. But we wanted to get another conversation out talking about what's happening in crypto, what's happening in your life, and we'll get to price and all that good stuff too. So let's just start by saying, hey, what you been up to, man? It's been a minute.
Yeah, it has been a minute. When was our last? I'll have to go back and look. I feel like it's been a couple months, right?
Yeah, Bitcoin was probably over 6,000.
Yeah, I think it was. I was in New Zealand for a little while. Yeah, it had to have been over 6,000. You know, when that breakdown happened, I was asleep.
Asleep?
I was asleep. I didn't have an alarm set, which I should have. Actually, no, I lied. I had alarm set. They just weren't audio alarms. Hmm. So I woke up and it was like, well, there it goes. That's it. So I missed the breakdown. And then I got cold feet. Anytime I entered a position, because it basically just went flat, and then after it broke down, so it was just, I don't know, it was miserable, man.
Yeah, there was one short consolidation period where it was my first attempt to like active trade it, which was in the 4Ks. I don't even remember anymore, but like there was some consolidation zone, maybe 4,300, something like that, and then it failed that one. But you really had, unless you were sitting there staring at it. Unless you were in ahead of time, it was tough to trade. Like it was tough to trade as a breakout and go because the actual moves down were so rapid.
Yeah, there are a few parts to that. So like I wasn't long or short on the breakdown. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, I wasn't long because Jesus. But
I heard some bad stories about people that were.
I can only imagine because the other part of that is even if I was trying to market sell. Like I couldn't get filled, which is another part of the problem because it's like, well, I know it's going down. Yeah. But if your market's selling and you're not getting filled, like it doesn't even matter, you know, you might as well not be trading. So that was a big, big issue for a lot of that on the way down. But for the most part, I tried to stay hedged short just on anything. I don't know. I certainly did better than I think most people did, but it wasn't pretty. That's for sure. We had a couple, you know, lately though, we've had a couple of patterns that have really played out. I've really leaned on patterns a lot more than I have cloud just because things have been not trending. They've just been sideways and choppy. I don't know what you've been leaning on lately, how you've evolved as a trader in these past couple Barty weeks. Have you altered any of your strategies at all?
Well, once we broke down, I was actually, that was the most confident I'd been in a long time because we trended down,
right.
You know.
Right. Yeah.
I can't remember all of my trades, but I know I did, you know, I made up some because I chopped myself up. Probably my worst tenure as a crypto trader was that late summer, end of 2018 consolidation stuff, or maybe it was like May and June. There was a time in there where I just got beaten up trading choppy stuff and like doing too much with it. And then there was not much you could do when we were at those record low volatility levels. So mm-hmm. once it broke down, I started feeling much better playing some of those trends. I don't remember every trade or anything, but it was certainly an improvement once we started trending. When it got annoying again was we made the bottom at 3,100. We moved up initially to 4,200. I loved that. Like, I was well prepared for that one. What I didn't expect was to hit another low volatility range from the end of the year until whatever, like early February. So that bleed down did a lot of stuff that threw me off. And I've talked about that in a couple of like videos and stuff. But when we went back up and then we started forming that wedge, I was just really surprised because we broke these like horizontal levels that I thought would mean that we're going to go make new lows, and the lack of willingness to make the new low, you know what I'm talking about? Like below 3,400 ish, mm-hmm. the lack of willingness to go make that new low started really making me think, all right, I think there's going to be some bullish tendencies here, and maybe this wedge is real. And there was a day in particular, I think around the end of January, where we had consolidated sideways looking terrible, in that the wedge was kind of starting to maybe form. And that was the day to me where we should have gone and made new lows. And we really didn't even break the declining volume profile. So like mm-hmm. that descending volume that we've had ever since we broke down from 6K. And that's what gave me pause, because I expected new lows within a couple of days or something, and we just didn't get it. So that shifted a lot for me. How did you look at that time frame?
I mean, I've, like I said, just been trading patterns super, super heavily. So like late December into Christmas was a giant falling wedge that broke up. So that was a mm-hmm. great couple of days. The Ethereum hard fork got delayed. That sort of threw things off a little bit. ETH sort of outperformed everything, and then it pulled back.
Was with that everything. Hard fork delay? That was essentially what ended the move up, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Whether or not, I'm sure it was related to speculation leading up to the fork, not necessarily the failed hard fork. Like, I think this hard fork is going to be the same thing. Like, post hard fork, things are going to pull back a little bit. Mm. So yeah, end of the year with Christmas, when no one was really paying attention, when Legacy had that massive down day, crypto, I think, did pretty well.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. We started this strange version of an inverse correlation on low time frames.
Yeah. I mean, Christmas Day for crypto was bad, but leading up to Christmas, it was really good. So it was pattern breakup, and then we had another pattern after that, another triangle broke up out of that. Then we had an opportunity for an inverted head and shoulders that failed spectacularly. And that's probably the most I've got shellacked in a long time. because I wasn't trading it properly. You know, I wasn't trading it as a go long on the breakout. I was trading it as I'm going to get long, you know, I'm going to try to get ahead of the game. Right. As during that consolidation. And then after that, you know, after the failed head inverted head and shoulders, we had the wedge that we were just talking about, and that broke up. And then we had another wedge, and that broke up. And now we just have some random mess. But on the macro, there's a potential Adam Eve, which historically, if you go back to like 2015, 2016, there were actually several Adam Eves that failed to break up in that time frame. So I'm pretty nervous about this working out the way it should. But, and there's a big but here, because everything else, LTC, EOS, they're all breaking up quicker, faster, longer, harder, better than Bitcoin is here. And that was really one of the most, well, not prescient, but omnipotent? No. What's the word for like...
for telling?
Telling's like version. A dumber version of what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I know what you're trying to say, but I can't...
Anyway,
I can't
it like called it. The move ahead of time, because, you know, if everything else is popping off, like...
Prescient?
That means like, that's not like predictive, but anyway. No, if everything else is popping off, that isn't like complete garbage. You know, if the mid and high cap stuff is popping off, then that's generally good for Bitcoin. But if everything else, like we saw a ton of pump and dumps on the lower stuff still that's happening, I don't think that's good for Bitcoin in general, but And yeah, that's kind of where we are now. Adam Eve situation. Even if you go to the weekly, I see it. But ETH has the cleanest Adam Eve, like to 160. So I think it'll get to 160 or tried to get to 160 pre-hard fork, which is in 7 days.
We'll see. I'm watching Ethereum and Litecoin really closely too. But I think Ethereum's is not the cleanest Adam and Eve yet. I think it has the potential to be the cleanest.
Sure. Yeah,
but
yeah,
it's,
I agree.
It's like horizontal breach has to be around 160. Yeah. But that 160 is what I see is where it closes off the Eve and can start to form a handle or whatever.
Right. I agree.
The reason that I've been similarly, and I've been shocked too, like, you know, you just always heard like Bitcoin's going to lead alts, and we're seeing Litecoin and Ethereum like front running Bitcoin on a lot of these market moves. And to me, Litecoin is like just screaming bullish on the higher timeframes, bullish reversal potential, because it completed the Adam and Eve and it did like a week of like handle stuff, and it broke up from like a horizontal around $47-$48 just in the past couple of days to get in what I call like the actual bullish range, because it's above the handle and it broke above the 200-day moving average. Mm-hmm. And to me, that has some weather vane potential for me of like continuation upwards. And that's what gives me hope for Bitcoin, because the 2015 stuff you're talking about, I didn't get to participate back then, but I've replayed it I don't know how many times. And there is a lot of like wimpy Eve type of failure back from the prior bear market.
Yeah. Adam Eve in 2015 or whatever, 2016, ended up mutating into a Wyckoff accumulation period or whatever. So you could like map that out that way. Even before that, so if you look at like, if you compare the 6K breakdown in this 2018 to the breakdown in 2015, there was a failed Adam Eve there that was an analogous or whatever, comparable to the 6200 breakdown. So historically, Adam Eves haven't done great on Bitcoin on the macro. They have on ETH. I mean, if you look at ETH, like 10, 15 bucks, there was an Adam Eve before it shot up to 1200 or whatever. So yeah, I mean, that's just like on aggregate what Adam Eves do that I've seen.
Do you have any thoughts on why Bitcoin in particular, it seems so laggard to complete those reversal patterns?
I don't know. I feel like there's more algos, if anything. Like the stop run we had before the last wedge broke up was just diabolical. I think those were your words. Yeah. Where it was like I'm just measuring it out. It was almost $100 reversal on what looked like seemingly a bullish breakout of a wedge, of a pattern. So, like, Don Alt, someone else on Twitter, and other people I talk to have been talking about this a lot, which is that ETH just trades cleaner lately than Bitcoin has been. So, like, I got into LTC at, like, 32, sold at 40, rotated that into EOS, got out at, like, 370 or something. So, like, I've done well on alts compared to Bitcoin, where it's just, like, derping around. Now, that's not to say like a majority of my funds aren't in Bitcoin, because they are, but the super active trading stuff, I'm willing to go, yeah, like the alts are moving here and I can rotate in and out pretty easily and be correct, you know, because like if something moves up 30%, and I talk about this on my highly popular YouTube channel, but if something moves up 30%, it's for me, it's like, okay, it's time to get off the pot and rotate into something else that hasn't moved yet. So, and that's what we're seeing with like LTC, EOS, BTC, ETH. All these charts are at various states of the same thing. And if you line them up, you'll see like, oh yeah, this is just like pre-breakout of what this already broke out as, you know what I mean? But yeah, no, I agree with you with the LTC thing. Like I wrote this article, for Brave New Coin in February 4th. And yeah, I mean, it looked really good. It looked really, really good. And it's breaking all the trend indicators as far as bullish reversal.
I think the other reason I like it so much is because so many people have flipped fundamentally on Litecoin, saying like the whole testnet thesis thing is worthless and all that, which is fine. But nobody talked about that when it was moving up last time. So to me, it's very bottom things. It's like super, super bottom things of saying Litecoin is worthless and will never pump. Like, I feel like just the revenge of Satoshi Lite will be strong. And I think my targets for Litecoin are probably higher than most people's. But just if the Adam and Eve, or just breakout move in general, if it plays out to the target, to me, it puts it close to like a $60 mark. So I actually haven't been trading Litecoin personally, but my kids, who are their strike rate is significantly better than mine. They trade less. They have been like relentlessly in Litecoin, and they transitioned into Litecoin directly from Ethereum at a pretty good time. So like, to me, the sentiment I got like went like somebody was like, rest in peace, their college fund, to me on Twitter. And I was like, you're just powering my bullishness on Litecoin now.
And I've sort of flipped in the past few months. Like, I don't even care what the coin is anymore. Like, if it's a chart, then I'll trade it. Like, yeah. I can't stand EOS, but I mean, there's certain things I won't trade, just flat out won't trade. But for the most part, you know, if the chart looks good, the chart looks good. Like I can't argue that, you know, like the fundamentals are most likely trash because we're coming off of a super bear period. You know, if you look at active addresses, if you look at transactions, all this stuff is mainly down on everything except Bitcoin. And we can get to that in a minute. But yeah, I mean, to me, the technicals drive the fundamentals. You know, the technicals are going to drive addresses and adoption and all these people rushing to get in. Mm-hmm. And I think it's pretty evident that when we're in a bear market, fundamentals are down, you know, because all this stuff is speculative anyway. So I don't know.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I just, you know, and this got me some last year where I just felt like you have to have a rally. Like, it can be a bear market, but you have to have a rally. And I think what I was surprised by was just the relentless non-rallying like flow of mm-hmm. capital, and the contraction in the crypto market was so huge that even if we end up ranging for a while, I actually, from a, you can call it fundamentals, you can call it technicals, so far the technicals are being supported, I feel like we're establishing a range for what will then probably be a longer accumulation period. Like, I'm not really a believer in we're just going to pop back up and have a hype cycle or anything, but I do think we're long overdue, and there is some relative disbelief in the market or whatever, that I think that this current rally can last a little longer. And like you said, is realizing itself in some of the mid caps and large cap alts more so than Bitcoin. And it'll be really interesting if Bitcoin does have that follow through. I think I'll be proven right that a lot of those mid caps and large caps will really pop off from a USD basis. But, Howard, it seems like you gained your exposure from, you know, relative lows on a lot of these alt pairs and on Bitcoin. So how are you looking at things now where it's like a little more dicey, you know, like there's, mm-hmm. I don't know if there's high time frame bear divs or anything yet, but like it's a little more dicey in terms of trying to be in, be out, hedge, whatever you want to do. So how are you looking at it now? Are you trying to reduce your expectations in terms of how far this can go, or are you like on the permeable bandwagon until we really freak people out, get some FOMO? How are you looking at it?
Sure. So like right now I'm mostly in cash, like 98% in cash, 90% mm-hmm. in cash. Basically after the last wedge hit its target, for me, I've just been trading patterns and targets and just keeping it simple, because there's no trend really. It's just chop, 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 you know, consolidate, chop some more, hopefully break out. So I'm definitely playing the capital preservation game versus the hold game. You know, that's mm-hmm. what really screwed me through 2018 was, not believing we could just Eiffel Tower up back down. Because anytime I had huge gains, like I wasn't appropriately hedged, and I was in disbelief that we would just go straight down. You know, like when you were here in DC, and we recorded a podcast. I don't know if you remember this, but I'm sure you do. We were walking like in the street, and you're like, "Oh, the Winklevi thing got denied a second time," and you're like, "Well, price is reacting." I'm like, "No, it's not a big deal," you know. But sure enough, like whatever the catalyst, which may have been CME rollover as well, a confluence of factors, you know. So all that stuff is shaped.
That was from around 8K. I remember it very well. We were going to someone's hotel room to drop something off. Yeah. Got that news.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I'm looking at this on a weekly chart right now. And from a technicals perspective, one of the things that I've been reliant on, it was like screaming to sell. But yeah, that was late. I think that was late July when that denial came in. And I was the same as you. Like usually in, I guess, more logical markets where there's like a more fundamental thesis for valuation, you do find buyers. And I think what happens is as the contraction has occurred in crypto, there was so much money to exit that it tended to be very rapid whenever those catalysts hit. But yeah, on a weekly basis, if I'm remembering the correct week, the week of like July 23rd and then the last week of July, Bitcoin was like just drilling into the 50-week moving average from the bottom. And it had used that 50-week as support in April. And then when it failed it was when we went and made our second round down to like 5,700. And then that was the recovery into summer up to like 8,300 to 8,400. And it just failed that weekly moving average spectacularly. And I've been... You asked like, how have I changed? What have I learned? That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's one of the biggest things that I've started to rely on more. And this has been really a big deal in legacy markets, but you just can't, I just don't know that you can beat the like 50, 200 moving averages on a daily and weekly time frame. Like that's what the legacy markets measure the health of a market by.
Right.
And when I looked at 2018, and even now when I'm looking at where we found support, the 200-day moving average and the 200-week moving average have just been massively successful, like unbelievably successful. And that's essentially been my barometer for my plan for the market is – ranging as support on the 200-week moving average. We've touched it twice since we broke 6K. We just popped off of it in December. That was the first move. And then we almost got to it again in February on that wedge before that's what broke up off the 200-week moving average.
Yeah, and that daily 50, to interrupt you. When I saw price on alts or whoever snaking through the 50 and not getting denied.
Exactly.
That was another reason for me. Like, oh, like, okay, it's game on and Donkey.
Game on Donkey Kong.
Yeah, there you go. I was just fudging that expression horribly. But yeah, I mean, even that failed Adam and Eve in Bitcoin, it failed at the 50 on the daily.
Yeah.
So when I'm seeing everything else pop up from the 50, like LTC, EOS, ETH especially. It's like, okay, well, maybe we can buy here and be safe, you know?
Yeah. And so I think that's probably the biggest change I've had from a trading perspective and how am I looking at the market perspective is, you know, people, of course, this is how people are. Like when something is doing well, they love it. When it's not, they don't. But the cloud is a trending mechanism. So... Mm-hmm. And when so much of the year was in consolidation, the cloud became less useful to me and to everyone because it just was like flopping all over the place on mid time frames. But the larger time frames too, it was moving slower and some things like that. And to me, the 200-day and the 200-week moving average, but also the 50, those have been better signs for me of what's the market health And then like, how strong is our need to like return to that mean? And the cloud's actually pretty effective for that too. But the weekly especially just takes so long to adjust on the cloud.
Yeah.
That it was a little harder. Whereas the 200 week, I stared at it a lot and I was like, that's where we got to go. That's where, you know, and then that's where we went. And I didn't want the 3K crew to be right, but that's what the 200 week said. That's where we went. And like historically in traditional markets, that's been a market barometer. And now when I'm looking at my top side target on a bounce back up, we have got to touch the 200-day moving average, because that's what you do with a moving average. You touch them every now and then. It is an average of the 200 days of price. So the question for me is not when will we touch it? It's can price move quickly enough to reach the 200-day, or will it range for so long that the 200-day comes down and really creates compression? Because compression between the 200-day and the 200-week is the way I'm looking at it. That's our range. And until we fail the 200-week, which right now is at, what, 3,100 or something, or we break above the 200-day, which is right this moment, like 5,180 or so, we're going to range in between them. And to me, the next stage of the market is which direction we go between those two key moving averages. And that's a really simple way of looking at the market, but that's the only way I can do it and maintain my sanity, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, before the breakdown, so it was either falling wedge or descending triangle. It ended up being descending triangle, which pre, you know, as that's happening, it was like, okay, we're going to get a 50% move, which brought us 3K. If you measure it out before it happened, like it's 3K. So we're here. That was another reason why I was like, okay, well, I guess that's where we're going. You know, I wasn't looking at the 200 week. So that makes sense that it hit there. I'm certainly looking at it more now that everybody else is looking at it, but looking at where price is now on the daily, it's in the cloud, just like it's breaking up from the 50, which gives me bullish thoughts of 5K by May at minimum.
Oh, snap. Is that in your handle?
No, but I did say it on Twitter, but, what I'm really waiting for is, it's a little nuanced, but the TK cross in the cloud needs to be bullish on the daily before I think that the edge-to-edge trade has success as far as probability is concerned.
So for someone not on a computer at the moment, can you describe the cloud setup on the Bitcoin daily for us?
Yeah, so when price compresses, cloud gets super tiny and thin. But when price drops or rises quickly, cloud gets super thick after something goes sideways for a while. So what we had was 6,200, the period where we just went sideways. Cloud was thin. Then cloud expanded as we dropped. And now as we're sideways again for the past 2 months, cloud is super thick and we're starting to get in the cloud again. So the fact that we're in the cloud right now, we didn't get automatically rejected, is a good sign. Mm-hmm. But what I'm waiting for, much like an EMA strategy, is the TK cross, which is a lower time frame look at support resistance, basically. So I'm waiting for that to cross bullish, which is, for people who know me, like, why are you in cash if there's an edge-to-edge trade here? Mainly because I'm waiting for that 5,200 to cross, or the TK cross to happen before I pull the trigger on that edge-to-edge trade.
Waiting for that to happen, price could kind of float down inside the cloud, like just kind of random walk inside the cloud while you wait for the Tinkin and Keijin to come together, right?
Right. So like if you look at the past edge-to-edge trades that we had in 2018, there was one in April that basically is the same picture where we are now. We pulled way up to the cloud. There wasn't a bullish TK cross. It sort of made a higher high and then just crashed. It failed, basically. So I'm worried about that same potential here, which is why I'm not in the long trade at the moment.
Yeah, that was my singular greatest trade failure of the year. And that's why So the edge-to-edge failed. I was actually playing that too, and it was also showing up on a lot of altcoins. I don't know if you recall, like on the alt BTC pairs. And the biggest failure I had of the year was around that time when, but so that's where I finally became convinced of the strength of the 200 day, because within the cloud didn't have the.
But we were even above the 200 day though.
That's my point. It got rejected off the 200 day twice, and it wasn't.
Oh yeah, you're looking at MAs or EMAs?
I'm looking at SMAs. This is where I get the F2.
Oh, okay, okay. All
so right. Like there's this SMA EMA overlay. This is nerdy, but like the SMA is just a straight 200 or a straight per bar average, whereas the EMA is weighted more heavily towards recency. And the EMA worked great in a highly trending market where it was often overbought in 2017, like you, even the 50% corrections, you wouldn't really get below like the 200 EMA, like it never got to the SMA. But on these bear market rejections, the SMA has been just like brutally good. And the first really big one came in May. And it smacked down off of that. And that's where I got beat up the most, because I was expecting we can do better than whatever that maxed out at, like 9,800, thinking we were going to go tap back above 10K, try to get people fully long again, you know, going above 12K, all that stuff. I thought that's where we were headed. We didn't get there. And my unwillingness to accept that we weren't going to get that last like $2,000 or 20% is where I performed the worst, basically. And then the consolidation was just a bunch of nothing. But now I'm on the opposite side of that, right? So like if it did so well, then I'm just expecting that we tap it. And to your edge to edge note, the cloud top, by the time we probably have a chance to get there. So they'll say like mid March, late March, like if we get that TK cross, if we have like the next month of kind of ranginess, probably upward, the 200 day will basically be the same as the cloud top.
Yep.
And it'll probably be close to the same as where some of those pattern measured moves go. And that's one of the
exactly. What if I told you, Brian?
What? Tell me.
They're exactly where those measured moves go. Like 4,800 to 4,900 is exactly the measured move of that enemy. So all this stuff lines up. Go ahead.
Yeah, and that's one of the beauties to me of technical analysis is like most of these strategies have been created because they were tested and you know someone was able to discern a trading strategy based off of one thing or the other. So whether it's trend trading, pattern trading, or whatever you're looking at, I do think there tends to be some alignment. And I cannot get my head out of this, what you're talking about, this 4,800 to 5,300 zone. 5,300 is kind of my top side of what I see as targets. But I just think we're headed there. That's where my bias is. So now what I have to look at is how do I account for my bias, right? Like in my scenario, where am I wrong, right? Like how do we know? What are our levels to say like, okay, all this lines up for potential high 4Ks, low 5Ks. How do we determine that we were incorrect and save our bacon to not give away the gains that we've had so far?
For me, if we break below the cloud, so 3,600.
3,600 in the near term. The cloud does kind of loop down. Oh, yeah, 3,600 is the low on the breakdown.
Yeah. But, I mean, ultimately, it's if you make a lower low, you know, if we break below 33,
3350.
Yeah, game over. Yeah. But I'm buying dips here. I'm not going full margin long, you know.
Right.
I'm not in most of my cash. It's just in cash. I think we're going to get a significant pullback before we go for 5K by May. But yeah, I agree. It's headed there. Any way you slice it, it's headed to 5K.
I cannot believe you've got another slogan. That makes me so happy. You're a glutton for punishment, man.
But on that same token, if we hit 4,800 to 5K, like I'm back into cash again. I'm not going to hold. I'm not even going to hedge. I'm not even going to get chopped up. Like, it's just not worth it. I don't think we're going to get past 5K in the next 6 months. I just don't. So it can do whatever it wants after that. But I think 5K is going to be like the interim top. You know, if you go on the weekly cloud, the 10K is 5K. So it's like, all this stuff is the same, I know, but it's just all lines up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then
go ahead.
We're starting to print like another Wyckoff type accumulation.
In that scenario, yeah.
Yeah, in that failed 5K, you know, 5K rejection or whatever.
The other thing that possibly does is, and this has been my thesis, and it sounds like I'm a little more aggressive. To my own fault in terms of time, but I essentially assigned Q1. I did this at the end of the year at my Q1 target as roughly, I think I said 5,300, but you know, anywhere over this range, any of these targets we're talking about, like high fours, low fives, mm-hmm. as a Q1 target. The other justification I had for that, not that I am in love with like date based fractals with, you know, only a few points of interest like the prior bear market. But what we did in 2015 was we created a bottom and we created a top, and then that's what became like this long accumulation range. And back then we had a similar move to what would be equivalent to a move to 5K when it was like up to 350 or whatever after we made the bottom. So we made the bottom, we moved up, and then we ranged for like a year.
Yeah.
And I totally see that as the possibility now. And yeah, you're probably right. That probably would end up making a nice little Wyckoff style setup. I have a question for you in terms of whether you think there's potential for this. Somebody was talking about this, but like 6K, like where we broke down from, technically, I guess we started breaking down around 6,300.
Mm-hmm.
If that's like the world's greatest resistance line now, because there was a huge Bollinger Band squeeze there. There was a massive volume profile there, pretty much everything you want to establish. What do you give chances of we break the gap where we've consolidated down here? Because by the time you get to 4,700, 4,800, you're basically in that gap, right? Back to where there's a gap from there to the low 6Ks. What do you give us the chances of going kind of beyond what people expect so that the obvious exit all markets makes people feel stupid and it actually ends up going higher first? Do you give that a lot of credit, or do you think that's saying the market's probably stronger than it actually is?
I mean, I almost don't even care, just because my trading plan is get out by 5K, like by hell or high water.
You don't care now, but if we're sitting at 6,500, then what do you care then?
Like what? One last thing about 5K. So the previous all-time high, there's an all-time high at 5K before we dipped down in September 2017.
And that was around the Bitcoin Cash fork?
That was Bitcoin Cash November?
No, I think that was the summer. So that would have been, we had a high.
I forget what September was at this point, but.
Oh no, it was 3K. There was June 2017, 3K down to 1800.
There was some mining FUD or something.
Yeah.
At 5K.
And then, yeah. I don't know. 5K down to 2900 in a matter of days. Missed those days.
So will we bust 6,200 anytime this year? No, I don't think we will. I think it'll take this year and next year to get there. I think what will help us was the Bitcoin halving in what is it, May, August, sometime next year. It's going to be super interesting though to see where LTC is going with its halving,
which is it's like this August or so.
Right, it's this year. So that was another reason why I was bullish on LTC in February, because I knew people would be buying it just on speculation alone. You know, there are people who seem to believe that halving has no effect on price and it's always priced down. Well, I have news for those people. I disagree.
Have you been writing about that?
Having? No, I mean, it's just, I can't argue because I don't know how to argue with them, you know, like an intelligent argument other than like, it's just supply demand. Like it's just simple, but anyway, yeah. So having LTC, having BTC is coming up. I think that's the only way we break 6,200. But again, if you look back at November 2015 to June 2016, okay. Just like map that out, that ascending triangle. I mean, that's the type of consolidation I think it's going to take to break 6,200. I just don't think there'll be any surprises, you know, an ETF, anything. I don't think anything's going to break 6,200. There's going to be so much loss aversion selling, you know, people who bought at that level and are like, okay, I'm out. I'm at break even now. I just don't see it, but you know, I hope I'm wrong, but I just don't think that's possible. What's your opinion?
I think you're probably right. Unless there is some form of reason due to sentiment that it just forces the market up. Like there's this, you know, you have to squeeze sometimes is like this general idea. Like you just can't get too overweight one direction. And I don't know what sentiment will be when someday we get back to 6,200. But I think one potential scenario is that not only are people like selling and leaving the market in general, but also it's possible that like your speculative short positions get really high once you're into the low 6Ks. And therefore, even if it's not a forever thing, I could imagine a break up and then failure. And I think that would actually have the potential to extend the bear market a good bit longer if it breaks up and then fails. But I have no idea how to speculate that yet. But I do think that that's one way it could break up quicker than you think, right?
Mm-hmm. One thing, back to 2015, 2016, during that ascending triangle, it's not on TradingView, but the shorts were massive at that time on Bitfinex.
Ascending triangle?
On the ascending triangle in 2015, 2016. And there are videos from like Chris Dunn talking about like short squeezes at that time. So like the information's out there. But yeah, I agree. That's another type of fuel that we will need to break 6,200, most definitely.
Yeah.
I mean,
I have drawings all over that period of like going back and trying to do TA on it. The ascending triangle that you're talking about is one of the most brutal trading patterns I think I've ever seen. Because if you go into the daily, the way I drew that, it actually failed the triangle first. By I don't know what percentage, but like from 445 to like 430 or something, which isn't nothing, but it like definitively failed the ascending triangle and then just freaking ripped, like it almost doubled over the next like 4 weeks. And like
it's got everything. It's got a Mike Hearn rage quit in there. It's got a Bollinger Band squeeze in there. It's got a failed fake out reversal breakout in there. Like it's quite a piece of work for sure.
Were you doing a good bit of TA by then?
I think I was. I don't know. I don't think I had YouTube at that time, but there's definitely plenty of tweets.
Do you remember your emotions
when it failed? It was, I don't think I tweeted that day. Like it was definitely not a good situation. I didn't get out of the market though. Like I just held through it because that was my mindset at the time. But so it worked out. But yeah. So longs, shorts were high at that time. And if I look at now, another reason why I think we'll get a pullback, if you look at longs, open interest in general is just massively long right now. Just like spiking to almost all-time highs. It's definitely on ETH. It's got to be at all-time high by now.
ETH was like 75% or something on Bitfinex.
Yeah, okay. So it's not all-time high, but the ratio is probably an all-time high for like long, short. Anyway, so that's just adding to the reasons. I don't think we're going to go up to 5K right now.
Yeah. Our buddy Johnny Moe kindly told me that my analysis was garbage because there was no actual open interest. But LTC BTC had like a 79% short interest on Bitfinex. So that was another thing that fueled my my believing for Litecoin outperforming. But I guess if the open interest wasn't that high, then it didn't matter. So I don't know what the open it. Do you know what the open interest looks like on the long side for Ethereum? Is it pretty high?
Yeah, it's pushing all time highs. It's okay, not so at all time high, but it's but the I don't know how to describe it, but so the ratio.
It's not just the ratio. It's also open interest is pretty high.
Yeah.
Gotcha. What else is so? It sounds like we're actually in a fairly similar mindset in terms of the market. It's more of whether we get there or whether we do that in March or May or June or whatever. But it sounds like we're both basically banking on there being a lot of ranging over the next year or maybe 2 years. If you were telling somebody or somebody was asking you, which they're probably not because people don't ask about markets when they're not up, What do you say today when someone's interested in getting into crypto? How do you tell them, like, this is how I would recommend doing it?
Well, this isn't investment advice, but
as always,
it's almost always I tell them buy a little bit and forget about it, or buy a little bit every month and forget about it. Like the consolidation we're in now is going to take a while, like we were talking about. I don't want it to take 2 years, but it damn well might, you know, and it might go lower, you know, it might go to 1K as many people still are calling for.
Yeah.
So, yeah, unless you're actively trading, you don't want to buy the farm or sell the farm to buy Bitcoin here. I don't think, you know, but
yeah, because the time value of that money could take, it could take some time.
Right. Right. But if there's just so much stuff going on right now, it's hard for me to even think about evaluating the time component. Like looking at legacy and how I think legacy is ready to roll over. Looking at like metals and how metals are just like spiking while legacy or while like equities and whatever else is spiking. Like that doesn't make sense to me. I don't know. There's just so much stuff going on right now that it's hard for me to like even think past the next month. I don't know.
I agree with you. Unfortunately, I've after playing equities quite well, I've played them quite poorly on the move back up. I probably had the best gains ever from Christmas, like right before Christmas, until into January. I got long. I got like big long. After I'd been either out of the market and short, like I had some success on the short side, but once I got long as the market was capitulating into Christmas, I got super long, did super well, and then got short way too early. Like I was expecting a bounce, and the strength of the bounce in equities was so big that it just took me totally off guard. And it interests me because I agree with you. I still think we're probably on with the potential to roll over without like a lot of intervening. So like back to full on QE and all that kind of stuff. It just seems like we're primed to roll over economically, at least within the next year or two. I'm very curious how that's going to treat the crypto market as historically a risk on asset class. Have your thoughts evolved in terms of what you think might happen?
No, I agree with you. Those my thoughts evolved over those past 6 months looking at legacy versus crypto and how legacy Q3 sort of led the downturn as crypto was consolidating, you know, and then crypto caught up to it. So I don't know, but crypto hasn't caught up to legacy now. You know, crypto has bounced a little bit, but legacy's bounced way harder.
Yeah.
Post Q1 of 2019, you know?
Yeah, and in the near term, I find that interesting too. It's like, will will crypto follow legacy markets up, or will it be more like gold? Like, crypto's acting a little more like gold, in my opinion, which right, I also find interesting.
But it was also inverse correlated to gold, in that gold was climbing and Bitcoin was, you know, which tells me more that it was a risk on instrument crypto than anything else. Hmm. So like, everybody says it's gold, blah, blah, blah. But in reality, it acts like a risk on instrument, which isn't gold, you know? That's why I'm worried when I see gold climbing even in this past week. It's like, well, it's another reason I think crypto's sort of cooked in the medium term. If gold is rising and it's not correlated positively these past couple of months. So,
yeah, I think we're really seeing some of these correlations be defined for the first time too. Like, it's, we don't really know, like, the crypto market's nascent. So a lot of its growth has just been parabolic during risk on times, but as it matures, maybe it does evolve to become more like a risk off asset. And I don't know the answer to that, and it'll be fascinating to find out, but yeah, I don't have all the answers. That's for sure. I've been, from an active trading perspective, I've been humbled by the traditional markets, over the past month or so, but, I'm really curious to see what Bitcoin does. Everybody's been talking about this being a buildle season. You're writing about it a lot. So I want to know, what do you think is interesting, like, fundamentally in the news, any of that kind of stuff? Like, what's been interesting to you? Like, what have you been maybe writing about, that kind of thing?
It's crazy to see how Lightning sort of came from this, like, back alley project to, like, where it is even now. Like, it's still in heavy beta, but to see, like, Jack Dorsey endorse it several times, yes, he's an investor, but still, that's super interesting to see all these people talk about crypto, to see Elon Musk talk about crypto. That's super interesting.
He has 0.25 BTC.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm okay. You know, he's a holder though, you know?
Yeah, he is.
To see JPM release a coin, like, that's super interesting.
Are you a Mr. Robot fan or no, follow it much?
Yeah. I know there's a lot of parallels to eCoin, right?
Yeah. The eCoin thing is hilarious. I haven't seen the whole show, but I've seen enough of it to recognize it seems like very in parallel to what the show does.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely scarily close to the show.
Do you think that's a validation of crypto, or is it them just doing, like, just seeing, like, they have some sort of need and they're going to call it a cryptocurrency because of marketing or something?
Yeah. I think it's just marketing more than anything. I mean, it's DLT or whatever. It's a closed, it's not public. It's just an interbanking ledger. So it's not like it's going to change the face of banking or anything.
Is it going to kill Ripple?
I mean, I hope it does, but it probably won't. I mean, it's not public. It's interbanking. It's not even a crypto, really. It's just, like, it's going to save them money in the end, I think they said, like, 40%. I don't know much about it. I tried to not read about it personally, because I just, there's so much, so many articles about this thing that I don't think anybody really knew anything about it to comment one way or the other.
What about the death of Bitcoin Cash? What do you think that is going on there?
Which Bitcoin Cash?
Well, I think SV seems like it's pretty dead. So I guess all comments are open.
I mean, they were both dead to me immediately after the fork. But, you know, people are too obsessed with this, these megalomaniacs fighting to see who could have the most emptiest network. So
gigantic really highways, like, with no cars.
Exactly. And I don't even follow price on either of them. The only time I hear price is when I'm talking to other people. Like, I don't even look at the chart, just because I don't care, you know? So I think the best way to let Bitcoin Cash die is to ignore it, because, you know, it's just going to die. It's going to shrivel up and die like it should. But
do you think that drama was impactful on the broader market? It seemed to be to me.
For sure. Big time. I mean, that, Yeah, for sure. Because that happened right around the 6200 shenanigans.
Like, yeah, I think Jihan made some kind of like, you're going to force us to sell a lot of Bitcoin or like move a lot of hash rate or something. And then bam, like we dropped like $600.
Yeah, there was that. There was the Tether bullshit that was going on around 6200 as well. So there were a few things for sure.
Yeah.
That helped tilt the apple cart, you know.
Tether been vindicated.
Yeah, Tether's been vindicated. I'm not surprised just based on my conversations with people that, you know, aren't public, but I don't know, you know. The public image around Tether is so poor that it just kind of needs to rebrand or go away, I think. It's just everybody thinks it's the devil, you know, and anybody new in crypto especially thinks it's the devil.
What's amazing is a lot of people are really bullish on Maker. Have you studied Maker at all or any of the other stablecoins?
Yeah, the Maker DAI thing is super interesting. We just had $1 million liquidation last night, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. So basically, if you don't know anything about MakerDAI, you can use your ETH to open a collateralized debt position at, you know, specific prices, and then like adjust the risk or adjust the collateral, and you get DAI, which is a stable coin. So what this person had did a couple of days ago, I guess, is they opened $1 million position or whatever it was at like 145, and we broke 145. last night, so they got liquidated. But anyway, yeah, it's super interesting. I think the MakerDAI people are like high on their own supply, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of circle jerking going on.
Maybe there's some scrutiny that can be put there that would be relatively similar to the claims against Tether.
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, I want to
at least.
Yeah. But I want to see MakerDAI fail in some way first before we just say like it's the best thing since sliced bread. I want to see what the multi-collateral DAI is going to look like. So as opposed to just using ETH, people are going to be soon going to be allowed to use anything or whatever they distinguish on the platform. So I think if it's multi-collateral, the ETH people will not love it as much because right now it's ETH's little darling. You know, it's the shining star on the DeFi system right now.
They hold like some percentage, 2 or 3% of all Ethereum or something.
Yeah. So that'll change pretty quick when once it's multi-collateral, I think, but we'll see.
Yeah, if people have interest in that. So our friend Meltem Demir?
Yeah.
So Meltem and then her co-host Jill Carson, they did a podcast all about DAI and they talked about it from the debt side of things pretty thoroughly. I think Jill has some background in like corporate debt markets and some of that stuff. So they talked about DAI if people have interest in it. I found that good or I found that interesting. It's a podcast called Grinds My Gears. My friend Corey that edits this podcast is helping them out. So go give that one a listen. It's a good show. They're super smart and they just kind of riff on all sorts of topics. So they have a DAI episode that came out recently.
Yeah, for me, a lot of this Ethereum stuff, mentioning someone with a debt background, corporate debt background, it's getting to the point where it's so beyond my understanding of like finance or whatever. Like, yeah. I can't even appropriately comment on it because I just don't know what I don't know, you know?
It's like bond markets and stuff.
Yeah. It's so very in the details, in the weeds, you know, of finance that somebody like me has no clue about that stuff, you know. Not that I can't learn, but
yeah,
you know, just as we sit here, I can't really appropriately comment on any of that stuff.
Why don't we finish by talking a little bit more about Lightning? Because to me, it's one of those where it's like, it's so bullish. Like, what's happening with Lightning is so bullish for Bitcoin, and it's happening in the depths of the bear market. And like during the bull market, people were like talking about all the scaling stuff and the issues and everything, not even counting the fact that so much of that was due to Bcash people spamming the Bitcoin network. But it's supposed to be defensive to those things. So I get the criticism.
Now we have proof of proof spamming the network.
Proof of proof? I don't even know what that means.
Yeah. Proof of proof. So real quick, before the final point. So proof of proof is just bootstrap security of altcoins onto the Bitcoin network.
Okay.
So they'll broadcast the state of an altcoin network on Bitcoin.
Huh.
So like it sounds weird and doesn't make any sense, but apparently it works to help prevent 51% attacks.
Is this kind of, is this along the same lines of what, so I was listening to an interview with Fluffy Pony. He was talking about the way the Tari thing that they're building is going to essentially rely on the network security of Monero through like a type of, whatever type of chain it's going to end up being. Is this similar? Like you can kind of rely on the security of the Bitcoin chain to do your thing?
Yeah, it reminds me of merge mining. So like Litecoin and Dogecoin. Dogecoin only exists because it's merge mined with Litecoin.
Yeah.
So like without the hash rate of Litecoin, Dogecoin would just die, you know? So I think this is very similar in the in that like transactional use cases. So you know, some of these altcoins are getting 51% attacked. So it's this proof of proof thing is valuable for them. That's sorry, cool. What was your question?
Yeah, no, it's like well it's
Tari, yeah.
Tari.
I know of it. I don't know too much about it, but it makes sense if it was like connected in some merge mining sort of way.
Yeah,
I don't
know. I'll have more on that soon, hopefully.
Lightning.
Yeah, Lightning. Let's talk about Lightning. Although I do want to give a shout out to Overtcoin because it got 51% attacked and then it doubled. It went up like 100% in a day. So
well, look at ETC. ETC got 51% attacked and it's still in a trust for God's sake.
And it didn't even move. It lost like 6% on the day after 51%. Crypto's great. So let's talk about Lightning.
So I was at a Lightning meetup last night.
Oh, really?
I've been kind of dragging.
Were you all just transacting like, Satoshis back and forth?
Yeah, just with our mind. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I've been dragging my feet learning about Lightning because I have adoption fatigue. This is all I told them last night. As somebody who's been around since 2013 and seen the same thing over and over again, it's just like, it's tough. Like, I'm happy. I'm glad. I don't want to like shit all over the Lightning network, but it's like we're doing the same thing over and over again. Like, we have tipping on Twitter now. Great. We had it on in a change tip. You know, we're buying pizzas. Great. We have all these wallets and stuff. Great. That's awesome. But I'm excited for the other stuff, the newer stuff that's coming, just the potential of everything. And I agree. It's super bullish. It's a use case. It allows sandbox development to happen, which isn't the case with Core. Anybody with a computer can start learning about it. And it's definitely a huge media marketing push right now, you know, with the LN Torch and capacity.
Wait,
and channels.
LN DeGeneres?
The Torch, LN Torch.
Oh, what's the LN component of that?
Lightning Network.
Oh, LN Torch.
LN.
I thought you were saying LN, like LN DeGeneres got passed the torch. Because I think Jack Dorsey had the torch and a couple other famous people. So I was like, wait, if LN DeGeneres had the torch, then that's serious business.
No, but like at its most basic level, it's just people passing around money, right? Like it's not a big deal. But so why is it such a big deal, Brian? Explain this to me.
So
why is the torch such a big deal?
I have an admission to make, which is until yesterday, I had never made a Lightning transaction.
I still haven't made a Lightning transaction.
Well, I just did. I just did. And I will give you a brief overview of my experience.
Okay.
So the tip in me thing that Jack tweeted out just went everywhere. Everyone was like, send me Satoshis too, please.
It was a change tip. Change tip was the exact same thing.
Yeah. Some new service comes out. Everybody signs up for it. About a week later, no one's used it. I used it as my excuse to say, fine, I'm going to do a Lightning transaction. I'm going to figure this out. And I'll use this app because Jack tweeted it. Why not? So I signed up for Tip and Me. And then basically it's like, you just send this to people. I thought that was cool because now for me to say, hey, send me something, I just send them a URL, and that URL has my scanner code thing on it that they can send me stuff with. However, me tipping someone else, obviously I have to get those funds from somewhere. So I had to go, I downloaded the Blue Wallet, which mm-hmm. is a Android and iOS mobile wallet. And what I learned is you have to send it Bitcoin, which is fine. Mm-hmm. And then Lightning operates as like a buddy to another Bitcoin wallet. So I sent like 0.05 Bitcoin to this mobile wallet. And then I realized now I have to send it to the Lightning wallet. Like you have to like top up the funds of the actual Lightning wallet. Once you get it to the Lightning wallet, it's really fast. I sent someone some Satoshis and it's literally instant. Mm-hmm. The barrier for me was I had to do 2 on-chain Bitcoin transactions to get the Satoshis to the Lightning wallet. So that's where maybe it's just wallet education stuff, but I sent 0.05 to the Bitcoin wallet and now I've paid a fee to send 0.05, which is okay. But then I didn't realize that like the whole, I just wanted to move it all straight to the Lightning wallet and I tried to do the 0.05 and it was like, you don't have enough funds. I'm like, I just sent 0.05 to this. Now I'm trying to send 0.05 to that. And so I ended up having to do another on-chain transaction. I was like, okay, well, what about 0.03? Well, now I have like 0.019999 on one Bitcoin wallet. And I've got like 0.029999999 on the Lightning wallet. So now mm-hmm. I can use this 0.029 and I can do crap with it. And it's fast. Yeah. And that's great. But I feel like this whole topping up process, if you do this between lots of different wallets, you're just going to end up with dust everywhere and it's going to be a mess. So it's not really the Lightning portion. It's the funding the Lightning wallet that is annoying because that requires an on-chain transaction. So when I'm thinking of this, it's like, am I exposing whatever that Lightning address is to knowledge, right? Like, so this comes into privacy mm-hmm. stuff. If I stack it all into that, it requires an on-chain transaction. Now, if I buy pizza, if I buy something off Amazon, you know, if Lightning's used everywhere, are all of my life's habits now like public record on this Lightning address or something? I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. So that's where my questions come up.
We talked about that a little bit, and because I mentioned like the one thing for privacy that you can do is not reuse addresses. So address reuse, I mean, you can track Monero with address reuse. So
yeah,
there's nothing is safe when you reuse addresses. So we were talking about Blue Wallet and people were saying they weren't sure if it changes the address every time. I don't have the app, so I don't know, but
I don't know. That would be a good feature, I guess, because that's what to me, it's, if you're going to do all your spending out of that, that's basically like giving someone a copy of your credit card transaction report to a public ledger and you know everywhere it goes. Maybe that's where all this Mimblewimble, I've tried so hard to ignore Mimblewimble, Grin, Beam. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what any of them are. I've just ignored them. They're probably all going to be the next rocket ship, you know, to the moon coins. but maybe that's where some of that comes in. But that's my primary beef with Lightning. What I loved about it is once I got the money there, so now that, you know, I've got 0.03 Bitcoin on a Lightning wallet, come at me, mobile hackers. It's the only cryptocurrency I have on a phone.
oh, they will.
Yeah. So now it's great. Like I can play with that. I can send it quickly. So I kind of like the whole tipping thing and being able to send cryptocurrency at 1 or 10 Satoshis is kind of cool. I think that is really interesting for emerging markets too. Like I think that's super cool and enabling. But I don't have big thoughts on it above that. I definitely think
we also talked about.
Go ahead. The merchant stuff, like I could imagine taking this on my website. I put the little tip button on my website just for kicks, see if anybody will use it. If you're listening to this mm-hmm. podcast, you can go to theledgerstatus.com, click on the URL, and you can send me 10 Satoshis. I'll share 2 of them with Josh. And it will cost me nothing because the Lightning Network is so cheap.
What's his face has that for like podcasts, and he had like $1,000.
Peter. I think.
Peter, yeah.
Yeah, Peter's got those big, big important followers with lots of Satoshis.
So like it's already happening, you know, like we talk a lot about pipeline possibilities, but a lot of this stuff is happening as we're talking about it, you know, so it's like not too far out of the realm of possibility for sure.
Yeah, I think the transactional ability is extremely important in the future. There's just probably a lot of user experience stuff that needs to be worked out.
Yeah. We had talked about, I lost my train of thought. But what I am going to do is I have a Bitseed node, full node.
Okay.
And there's a guide I found last night. So I'm going to dedicate the weekend to spinning up a Lightning node on my Bitseed full node. And we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, so your Lightning node can be right alongside your Bitcoin full node. And then what you can do, what I saw in Blue Wallet as an example, is there's the settings section. And by default, it uses a certain hub, like lndhub.io as the node that you're basing off of, but you can set a URL for the node that you want to use. So you could use your own node as kind of your home base, I guess. That's pretty cool, whatever that means.
Yeah, that makes sense. Oh, so the other thing we were talking about was custodial wallets versus non-custodial wallets.
Ah, okay.
So like for Lightning, like for Blue Wallet, like I don't know how it would work. A software wallet that's non-custodial. I guess it doesn't work. But
well, is that Bitcoin on my phone, or can Blue Wallet?
Okay. So that's the point. Yeah, I'm super tired. But
no, it's okay.
Yeah. So is it on your phone, or is it like who owns the private keys there? Basically, I think.
Yeah.
What we were talking about, but
that was my final. I'll finish on that bullish thought as well, which was the other thing Jack said, and he eventually said this. I was speculating about it with somebody right before that. And it was like, okay, he's the CEO of Twitter. That's one thing. But he's the CEO of Square, which is this merchant processor for millions of small businesses especially. But it's also an online payment processor for lots and lots of stores. So for me, like if I take money on a website, but I could also take it in person. And I could do both of those through Square's software and hardware solutions that they have. And their hardware solutions are in like coffee shops all over the world and stuff. So he said it's a matter of when, not if, that you can use Bitcoin with Lightning on Square terminals. That is so bullish because now you've just enabled instant Bitcoin transactions on a whole lot of devices where maybe people will choose, hey, I want to get into Bitcoin for this next bull run. I'm going to put $1,000 on there, and I'll also spend it every now and then as things get super cheap with that $1,000 of Bitcoin that I bought because Bitcoin's appreciating or whatever. To me, that really enables a bullish argument for a use case of Bitcoin itself, while it can also be like the store value component and all that. Like the true vision of Bitcoin, both as transactional and the newer found store value side of things.
Yeah, but you'll have people on the other side saying merchant adoption is actually bad because all they do is just sell it. Like merchants on the merchant side, sure, they transact in it, but they immediately sell it.
The merchant sells it.
Right, so it's like a net zero. You know, there's...
But it's a use,
you know,
it's
yeah, it is use case.
So one of the like core tenets of a store value is that it has to have a use case, right?
Right. No, I completely agree. But I'm playing devil's advocate. Like, yeah. So my question with this LN Pizza thing, so it uses the Fold app. If you're unaware, there's this, you can buy Domino's Pizza with Lightning, but it uses the Fold app in the background. And the question I had was, what did they do with it? Like, do they keep it? Do they pull a BitPay? Do they just sell it? Like, what do they do? You know, I don't know.
To me, it seems like a corporate treasury decision. Of course, like a pizza shop or a coffee shop may make different decisions and not be as consequential. But imagine an Overstock.com, like a public company, maybe they make a corporate treasury decision to keep their some of their assets in Bitcoin because they receive them in Bitcoin, and that's what they just choose to do with those funds. And I think that can vary from merchant to merchant. So I don't know. I mean, that's a risk off move. Like, a lot of corporations do currency management if they operate internationally. So doing that with Bitcoin as well could be one of the things that you do. So I don't think that I think that's an overblown bearish concern. And I generally think actually using Bitcoin in a transactional way will solve a lot of the FUD that Bitcoin got during the last bull market.
I agree. Well, the very last thing I'll say is, so we were talking about taxes earlier and the whole de minimis thing
has to happen.
The exemptions. Yeah. It you know, if you're having lightning transactions.
Or put me on the record for like that part of what I do is just not being reported. Like when I send you two Satoshis off that donation, I'm not reporting that in my taxes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean that's a concern as well. But
yeah, that's a good point.
It kind of is what it is.
Well, get on it, Coin Center. You're there. You're there in DC. You talk to Niraj and fam.
I that's right. I was just at a cocktail reception the other day.
Yeah. Well, that's their job.
Yeah. Niraj.
All right, man. It's good talking to you. I really enjoyed this, and let's do it again soon.
Sounds good. Just run dry in a house of cards. I feel the breeze wound so tight I can barely breathe.